And super apps are going to enable banks to expand their relationships with customers by creating a huge walled garden of best-in-class services to meet particular needs well beyond traditional banking services.
Hello, and welcome to the Banking and Payments Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer. Today is October the 25th. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services here at Insider Intelligence, and your host. This is our fourth episode, so now that makes this a thing. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a five-star rating and subscribe. In this new series, you'll hear about pressing issues keeping banking and payments leaders up at night. Each episode will feature fresh news, hard data, and our analyst's perspective on where it's all going. Last episode looked at the headwinds facing credit card issuers during these uncertain times. Today, I'm bringing back a Banking and Payments Show podcast veteran, Dan Van Dyke, head of financial services research at Insider Intelligence, to talk to me about super apps. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Rob. I love that two episodes makes me a veteran, but I guess with four episodes down, that is true. And I'm excited to be back and to talk about this topic.
Well, I'm excited to have you back. And if you could, in 30 seconds or less, tell me and our audience what makes an app super.
30 seconds or less, that's hard. Okay, I wasted about five there. But so what separates a super app from an app is that a super app is something that you think of as a one-stop shop for financial services. So it was born sort of as an Eastern phenomenon, with WeChat being sort of the poster child for this model, where they offer actually millions of features within one application. Now in the West, we're starting to see firms starting to build this out.
Dan, last year at Money 2020, you and I hosted a roundtable discussion with a very senior group of execs, CDOs, CIOs, head of innovation at the largest payment companies and banks, to talk about super apps. We discussed Eastern super apps like WeChat, and the group had lots of ideas about how it could evolve in the West, but everyone seemed pretty sure it won't evolve like it has in Asia. I'm not so sure. What about you?
So I would fundamentally agree with where we landed at that dinner. We're not going to see the exact equivalent of a WeChat in the West, where they had a billion plus users and millions of features. We're going to see a more targeted model that emerges in the West. And the East is sort of like a transformative model. So think 0 to 1. You have an incumbent landscape that's very immature. You have a large underbanked population. You have technical factors setting the stage for an emergence of one app to rule them all, to sort of rise up. So specifically, there limitations to the App Store in China. There's no Google Play. That really allows for one user that offers a lot of mini apps to spring into existence and capture the entire market. It's a very different sort of landscape in the West. And so we're not going to see the same result. This is going to be an additive model, not a transformative model, but additive, in that there's something pretty good that already exists. You know, you can bank through Bank of America. They have tons of features. You can get insurance readily. And a super app has to add value on top of that existing landscape, which means it'll probably be a slower road and it'll lead to something more targeted, but still leaps and bounds over what we currently have.
That's great. So for today's conversation, then, let's focus on the different flavors of super apps that will emerge and who the players will be. Let's break the conversation into three segments. In the first segment, called The Headlines, I want to discuss a couple of recent super app developments. In segment two, Story by Numbers, we've each selected two numbers that tell a story about where super apps are going. And segment three is called For Argument's Sake, where you'll take the position that Western super apps will emerge, aligned to meet the needs of specific cohorts, and I'm going to argue that a singular super app will dominate in 5 years. That should be interesting.
Absolutely.
So let's get started with the headlines. Our first headline today is, if Musk turns Twitter into X, his Everything app. And now this has been covered in lots of places for sure now, maybe overcovered. But Elon Musk's vision is to offer many more services through Twitter by turning it into a super app. WeChat in China is his model. So what do you think about X?
Elon Musk is obsessed with X. You think about his ex Grimes, who he had his child X, and then there's a whole bunch to that name.
He named
that
his child X.
Yes, X Ash something something. It's like a password, basically.
Okay.
And the roots of this really go back to before he founded PayPal. He founded a company called X.com, and the original vision of it was going to evolve to become a financial services super app. He was talking about this way before anybody else was talking about this.
Credit to him.
Credit to him. Ultimately, X.com merged to become PayPal. PayPal was taken over by Peter Thiel. Elon Musk was kicked out. And for the past two decades, he's been sort of licking his wounds, thinking about X. He's built the Model X. And now he's coming back to it. He's acquired Twitter. That gives him a massive user base. That gives him a huge employee base to build this super app vision. And it's something that he's really eager to do. Ultimately, though, I see it as a long shot. And the reason is, one, he's dinged his trust with investors. So the super app ambitions that he has will be held back by the fact that recently, with Twitter being an on-again, off-again, now on-again acquisition, this and a string of different events has sort of hurt his credibility in the investor landscape. And then from the consumer perspective too, his halo is starting to dim. And trust is absolutely pivotal for financial services. It's not pivotal for a social network necessarily. But we've seen that Meta has tried to make multiple moves into financial services, and every single one of them falls flat. And in a word, you know, the failing is trust. And Elon has to rebuild trust with consumers in order to ultimately have people trust X to handle the most precious thing to all of us, which is the money that allows us to live a good life with our loved ones.
Ultimately, the challenge for him is that X is now aligned to him personally, and nobody wants to invest with a person. You put your money into an institution, not into an individual, I guess is the way I'm thinking about it.
Nobody wants their X to have all their money.
No. That's amazing, Dan.
Thank you.
Let's get to the second article. Walmart aims to shake up banking, starting with new checking accounts. And this is an article that we published, and it covers how Walmart recently bought a neobank and are now poised to offer a full suite of deposit and loan products. So, Dan, I'm going to ask you, why would a Walmart super app work?
Walmart is a really exciting super app contender, and its super app ambition is dubbed One.
The number one, or O-N-E?
O-N-E, One.
All right.
And it's going to combine savings, it's going to combine borrowing, it's going to combine spending products all under a single umbrella, and it will be integrated with the retailer's physical and digital channels. And, you know, you think about Walmart's enormous presence across the U.S., that's a huge differentiator. As of 2019, 90% of Americans resided within 10 miles of one of its locations, and that creates an on-ramp to add money into its application. And Walmart already estimates that it has 1.6 million employees, over 100 million weekly shoppers that it could convert to this super app. And importantly, its reach is not just wide, but it's also deep. It's extremely important to the underbanked population, which actually makes up one in four members of the U.S.
Yes,
so
it does.
This app could include features like budgeting tools, savings accounts, a credit score tracker, early access to paychecks. Really, the sky's the limit. And Walmart does have trust in its customer base. And I think that's a really pivotal differentiator that's going to set it apart in the market.
Well, that is really interesting. Underbanked is something we're going to talk about in a little bit. But now let's go to our next segment, Story by Numbers. In Story by Numbers, we've each picked two numbers which tell a story about the evolution of super apps in the West. So Dan, you're the guest. Can you go first?
Absolutely. My number is 173 million, and that is the addressable market in the US for super apps, according to a December 2021 study by payments.com.
It's a big number.
It's a very big number. You think about the total population of over 300 million, that's about half, to do a little bit of napkin math. And the fact that you could convert such a large population is one part of the equation, but you think about the GDP of the US, that is what makes it a uniquely potent super app landscape, but it's also a uniquely challenging one to break into. And we've seen a lot of pure plays trying to break into the US market when you think about neobanks. I think similarly, it would be a mistake to underestimate the moat that exists, not just technologically, not just from a competitive perspective, but also in terms of regulation within the US that could hold providers back.
Let me ask you a question, though, because really on the 173 million, it's like it's almost such a big number, you can't even consider how the scale of it. So if you're thinking about launching a super app, it's the chicken and egg question. What comes first? Are we aggregating a large audience first, or do you need to develop a super app to aggregate that large audience?
I think it depends on where you're talking about. So you asked the question talking about the US, but thinking back to the original markets where it emerged, in China, you saw that WeChat, as an original core functionality, was built around a hook feature messaging that built in functionality alongside of its user base. So it was really, if you build it, they will come. However, in the US, I think it'll be a totally different dynamic where it's unlikely that anybody is going to build a full-fledged super app before having a large audience already.
Right.
And the barrier for entry is a lot higher because of all the reasons I just mentioned, the regulation, the incumbent landscape, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to get back to this number in a minute, but my first number is 1/3. According to a Deloitte study in 2021, 1/3 of consumers feel overwhelmed by the number of devices and subscriptions that they need to keep track of. Super apps can reduce the number of apps someone relies on for financial services. And for a really long time, banks have been trying to get consumers, their customers, to consolidate their financial lives. But do you think that super apps are going to facilitate a consolidation of relationships?
I mean, in a word, yes. So we're starting to see this fatigue of too much choice playing out in the applications market. I know you asked about financial products, but just to pivot for a moment.
Sure.
In the original super apps market, the problem that they were solving for was not enough good choices. But in the West, the problem is really the opposite. It's too many choices. And if you look at it by the numbers, according to insider intelligence forecasts, consumers actually hit peak app, meaning having the most applications installed on their phone during the pandemic. And ever since then, the number of applications that consumers are having installed and using per month is actually declining. So we're seeing that trust fatigue playing out. And I think where this leads from a bank perspective is one of two places. So one is the model that wins is a walled garden. So think like Apple is building all these services. They are the face of it. There is maybe one provider that they're partnering with for each service. And then secondly, there's the open ecosystem, which could also win out in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So this model is a little bit more like a marketplace. So think like Amazon or Google, where a customer can come and they can start the journey of figuring out which provider they're going to ultimately use using this marketplace and maybe even have all those interactions take place through this one application.
Well, that's really fascinating. What is your next number, though?
So my final number is $7 trillion. And according to some brilliant...
You're all about the big numbers today.
All about big numbers. Well, I did say one. I did say one before, but I think that was in the headlines section.
Yeah, that was the name of a super app.
Yeah, and X is an imaginary number, so that doesn't count. But final number is $7 trillion. And according to brilliant research by Bain & Company, and I highly recommend everybody search for this Bain & Company research, this is the value of the embedded finance transaction landscape in 2026. And that is up from $2.6 trillion in 2022. So from $2.6 trillion to $7 trillion, huge growth. And embedded finance is the framework for super apps. Mm-hmm. What is embedded finance? It's seamlessly embedding financial transactions in customers' existing customer journey. So think you're trying to rent a home. This is just an example that's coming to me off the top of my head. Trying to rent a home. Why not push out renter's insurance through that journey? That would be an example of embedded finance.
Right.
And banks can use this same approach to bolt on value-added services within their apps. So it's not just big tech who can ride the embedded finance wave, but also add features like shopping for local contractors or buying a car into that relationship that begins with financial services.
You know that I bank with USAA. And I also have insurance there. Maybe that is a super app because I've shopped for cars through the USAA app.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're describing?
Absolutely. That is absolutely an example of a super app. Another non-incumbent example would be Revolut, which offers everything under the sun, you know, arguably too many features, which actually brings me to a risk of being a super app, which is doing everything but not mastering the unit economics, which is the name of the game in 2022. It's what investors love to see. And so being unprofitable in a number of ways all at once can just compound the problem. So it's important to focus. And I think that's where the advantage is tilted towards incumbents' favor, because they understand unit economics.
That's really powerful. My last number is a number that we're revisiting, which is 25% of households are underbanked. And I see this particular population as one of the biggest opportunities for super apps to make services like contactless mobile payments, food delivery services more accessible. We talked a little bit about it, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. Yeah, I think it's worth unpacking from underbanked. What do the terms unbanked and underbanked mean, and how are they different? So there's one group which is underbanked, and that means using alternative financial services. So if you've ever used a payday loan or accessed a pawn shop, that would be an example of alternative financial services. And these usually carry predatory terms, so they're classified within this moniker of underbanked. And there's the second group, which is unbanked. And those consumers lack bank accounts. It's a smaller group within the US, but still sizable. And in order for consumer services to reach the unbanked group, you need an on-ramp for them to take cash and convert it into a digital format that they can use, for example, order food delivery services.
Right.
So that in turn would require a large retail network, a brick and mortar chain, something that has inroads across the US, like Walmart, to tie back to an example we touched on before, in order to be effective. But it is a viable model, and it's somebody's opportunity to be had.
Well, that was fun. And if I was to sum it up, I'm going to say that the super app train has left the station. So it's not a matter of if we're going to see Western-based super apps. It's really when, for what audience, for what purpose. And there's probably going to be many launches. And I guess time is going to tell which super app trains arrive in stations with lots of people in activity and which ones are going to arrive in desolate stations that nobody cares about. But all of those things are going to happen, I feel confident. So before we move forward, let's take a break to hear about our financial services forecasts. When I talk with clients about how they leverage insider intelligence, forecasts are often at the top of the list, especially now in budget planning season. In fact, insider intelligence has one of the largest libraries of forecasts in the world. Clients have access to more than 10,000 proprietary metrics to size their opportunities, plan for changes before they happen, identify new markets and audiences, and invest in new products. Right now, our most popular forecasts for our banking and payments clients include forecasts on buy now, pay later, cryptocurrency, credit card fraud losses, digital account opening, and mobile banking users. We're here to help you. Visit insiderintelligence.com to become a client today. And we're back in our final segment. For argument's sake, we're going to debate how Western super apps will emerge. I'm taking the position that there will be a large, singular super app that will dominate online commerce in 5 years. You'll argue that Western super apps will be more aligned to life stages or financial goals, for example. So this is how it's going to work. We're each going to take 30 seconds or so to lay out our positions, and then we'll ask a couple of probing questions and argue until either I win or we're out of time. Make sense?
Makes sense.
You go first. You're going to talk about how super apps in the West are going to emerge to life stages and financial goals.
Yeah, so I do not believe there's going to be one app to rule them all. I'm not going to get into the Lord of the Rings too much and say that there's going to be seven apps of power, but to pivot back, I think it's going to be a little bit more narrow and deep. So it's going to be aligned to specific life stages and financial goals. And we're going to see super apps take a more targeted but extremely deep approach that builds off of what we see in the existing market. So to give an example, we're seeing banks like Nubank in Brazil that's introducing features that center on consumers' life stages or specific journeys. An example of that would be the home ownership journey, which includes finding the home, purchasing the home, moving into the home, managing a home, speaking from experience, crying is your decision, but no, I'm just joking. You know, financial goals like retiring, and super apps are going to enable banks to expand their relationships with customers by creating a huge walled garden of best-in-class services to meet particular needs well beyond traditional banking services. How did I do? Was that 30 seconds?
Close. It was pretty close. So I take this position that there's going to be a singular super app that captures a significant portion of the population. And it's because I think it's going to take scale to get broad adoption. And the major players and investors are going to be looking for very large addressable markets. The other point is we've seen that novel concepts that make life more convenient get adopted by large audiences. Amazon, Uber and Venmo are verbs. So they've come from I never heard of them to dominating the market really quickly. And there's a lot of big players who are vying for this super app space, X, which we discussed, but also PayPal, Meta, Apple, Google, all come to mind. And they all have reach and scale to develop a super app with broad appeal. And they'll be able to get partners and put a lot of muscle behind it. So I'm going to go with having a big singular super app that's going to own commerce. So before you ask me my questions, let me ask you a couple of questions. Who's going to build the first super app?
So I sort of spoiled it before, but Nubank in Brazil. I love Nubank in Brazil. Obviously, they're targeting a huge population, but the speed at which they've been able to roll out incredible features is tremendous. So it includes buy now, pay later, includes insurance, prepaid mobile top-ups, remittances, paid account called Ultravioleta, and more recently, it acquired a payment gateway known as SpinPay, which works with over 220 retailers and allows them to accept payments through Brazil's national instant payment system. I am Team Nubank to the end.
All right. Well, Team Nubank, how big is their opportunity actually? Have you sized it?
So the Latin American market is obviously enormous, but Nubank's existing customer base is incredibly strong on its own. It's a powerhouse. It's now valued at $55 billion. Wow. It's the region's most valuable company and has a 35 million strong user base, which is leaps and bounds ahead of any neobank within the US.
Yeah, by leaps and bounds, as you said.
Absolutely. So I think now it's my turn to finally start asking you some questions.
Yeah.
So Rob, you mentioned that all the big techs are obvious super app candidates. I want you to make a call. So who do you think is going to be the super app that wins it all in 5 years, since you think it will be one app to rule them all? Who's it going to be?
I'm going to put my money on Apple Wallet.
Yeah, why's that?
Well, first, according to us, our forecast, 1 in 6 people already use Apple Wallet. I personally already use it. You know, I use Apple Pay when I buy gas or coffee at a convenience store. I store concert tickets and sporting events in my wallet. Apple Card is an integrated experience, and they've just recently announced that they've added savings and automatic savings with a partnership with Goldman Sachs. So I can see managing all kinds of things in my wallet, insurance, mortgages, vaccines, certificates. And I even read that they are negotiating with states so that they can keep driver's licenses in wallets. So imagine Ticketmaster had a wallet applet that would enable me to upgrade seats, or Quicken wants permission to see if I can get a better mortgage rate. And what do you know? All of my important documents that they need to close are in my wallet. So it's actually an instant transaction. So I think that those things make Apple Wallet a likely candidate. Everybody has an iPhone, or half of the people. I mean, so many people, I don't know exactly. I'm sure we do know exactly, but I don't.
All the teens have iPhones. It's something like 95% adoption last time I checked.
Right. And Apple has trust, and they are making a big play in the privacy area right now and giving people control over privacy on their phones. And I think that that's going to play really well for them as they move into the super app space. Boy, that was fun, and I'm pretty sure I won this argument. Thanks, Dan, and thanks to everyone for listening to the Banking and Payments Show, an eMarketer podcast. Also, thank you to our editor, Todd. In today's episode, Dan and I referenced two recent reports, our Super Apps and Banking report and our U.S. Mobile Peer-to-Peer Payments forecast for 2022. Our next episode is on November 8th, and you'll not want to miss it. See you then.